Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
Your name is Eric. You're here with resident French expert Michael. Happy to be here today. Thank you. And today on Double Feature, we're going to be covering two films, part of a six-film, three-show saga on the ongoing experiment that is Double Feature.
This even sounds like an experimental episode of Double Feature.
Yeah.
All right. Can we, what do they call it? Hang a lantern on it. Let's hang a lantern on it.
Yeah.
I realize I don't sound very good. I'm talking to you from Britain. I'm in England.
Sure. The good news is it's not allergies, which is one of the things you get to dodge when you're no longer in the United States.
Yeah, no, I'm talking to you into a tin can from London.
Yeah, no, that's exciting.
I couldn't quite stretch myself all the way to France for this movie. But, you know, if I had made it all the way to France, I would have felt bad I didn't make it all the way to Poland. Yeah. So whatever, it's never good enough.
There's sort of a shower thought on today's episode, which is that I'm speaking in a normal accent and you have a foreign accent, but we're still speaking the same.
Oh yeah, that's deep. That's super deep.
Yeah.
Is that as deep as we're going to get on?
Not even close.
I guess we should give people people the backstory of what the fuck this episode is.
Yeah. Well, first I'm going to give you the front story. The front story is that the two films today are Lucio Fulci's The Beyond and Kieslowski's Three Colors White. Those are the films. They are part of a greater arcing trilogy, a duality of trilogies that we decided to resurrect from year three of Double Feature, where we take two trilogies and sort of compare them to each other, you know, over the course of a year. So it's Fulci's Gates of Hell trilogy, of which last time we covered City of the Dead, and Kieslowski's Three Colors trilogy, of which last time we covered Three Colors Blue, which means we are smack in the middle of the trilogy with The Beyond and Three Colors White, and then next time it'll be another Fulci and another color. But I don't want to, I'll confuse you if I give you all this information. So you'll just have to hang tight until that day, or at least the end of the show.
I guess just look up I've already forgotten. What is it? City?
Gates of Hell.
You're right. Right. No, what was the previous installment?
Oh, City of the Dead.
City of the Dead and Three Colors Blue. Okay, so you can go back, you can listen to the City of the Dead and Three Colors Blue episode. That'll be your first chunk. We're now safely in the second chunk, which will spoil and do a Patreon.
Right, yeah. Well, definitely, we're going to spoil both of these films as hard as possible. One of these films, these aren't really spoilable films because I think one of the things we're going to learn today is that these trilogies don't exist in their narratives, if that makes sense.
No, but maybe we'll find out further.
And then if you really, really, really can't bear the thought of us missing out on completing this trilogy, that's patreon.com/double feature. Chuck a couple bucks in there. Chuck $3, one per film per trilogy. And we'll do our best to keep the lights on and find Eric a ticket home.
Oh my god, please. This is a glimpse into the future of what every show could sound like if we lose any more of that Patreon money. So a big thanks to everybody on there, and you will excuse me this week if I don't have the piece of paper that's usually folded in my pocket with your names on it, but we do in fact love all of you. It's patreon.com/double feature.
All right, are we ready to jump into The Beyond?
I'm always ready to jump into The Beyond, man.
Cool. So this is funny because this film is also part of another trilogy, but it's the third one in the Bed and Bath trilogy. So we're going to jump into...
Worst.
We're going to jump into...
Click level jokes.
Probably. Of the Gates of Hell trilogy, this is... the most graciously gratuitous, I think. This movie, it's when it comes to Fulci, people tend to know Fulci as, I tend to, by people I mean me, because that's who I know. Mm. I look at Fulci as the Herschel Gordon Lewis of Giallo. And this film is why. both of these trilogies sort of are celebrations, or maybe lampoonings of certain things. And I think the Gates of Hell trilogy, it's just interesting because this is, you know, the trilogy is denoted as the Gates of Hell trilogy, which is sort of a narrative pin to the story. You have to somehow invoke the Gates of Hell, of which I think in this universe there are actually seven.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
can we pause here for a second?
Yeah.
When you hear that something is one of seven gateways to hell, I just want to know if your brain operates the same way as mine does. Don't you go, where the fuck are the other six?
Sure.
I'm missing six films. That's what I feel like.
Well, we know where one is. Yeah, the first gates of hell is where the city of the living dead.
They're going to have to cram. I'm just saying, you're not pacing yourself.
Yeah, we can only assume the other five gates are under the house by the cemetery.
Perfect. Easy.
But yeah, no, as soon as they go seven gates, I'm like, oh, sounds like somebody's, you know, Gates of Hell cinematic universe collapsed.
Yeah, right.
No, I love that this movie basically goes, so there's like a hotel, there's a gate of hell under it. Anyway, let's get to what we're actually here for, which is gratuitous gore.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, when you're watching some of these gore scenes, it's funny because it's become ingrained in my like psychological language because of back in the old days of watching movies together. And that was when we were first discovering Herschel Gordon Lewis. And I don't know if you remember the sort of visceral reaction to watching something like The Wizard of Gore or The Gore Gore Girls, where we would sit there and something just fucking disgusting was happening on screen and we would just shout, oh, Herschel. But I felt myself wanting to say the same thing to this movie. Yeah. Just, oh, Herschel.
Yeah, well, there's the same sort of, I mean, I'd have to say, if I'm being totally honest, I think an even better eye toward, oh, you can't say eye on a Fulci movie, can you?
No, there's
a better attention paid to the idea of set pieces. You know, there are these, man, the ending, the different eye shots, let's start with like the spider scene.
Sure.
You know, I feel like you
could... With the real spiders. Do you know some of those spiders were actually fake?
Oh my God. I couldn't tell by watching the film with my own, let's say, face. Yeah, well, I think, you know, fake or not, man, it's still gross as fuck.
Sure, it's disgusting.
You know what's really amazing is when we're talking about comparing all these Fulci movies, and I really think we should take extra time to try to compare the Fulci movies, because the Kieslowski movies, you know, they sort of like call on themselves to do that, whereas the Fulci movies are just sort of like, I don't fucking know, here you go, here's some of this. But really, when we look at it compared to the last one we did, I think there's an even more heightened sense of like, okay, here, now we're doing this scene, and you can kind of you can do the quick bulleted list when you walk away from the movie of, oh man, do you remember that? Oh man, do you remember that? Mm-hmm. And I'm just so impressed by some of these, the way some of these things are still landmark, even after it's been so many years since we saw our first Herschel Gordon Lewis movie.
Sure.
Or, you know, or even once we got to Italy or started exploring Giallo, this spider scene is... Here's what I don't understand. Explain this to me. Okay, they get so fucking close to these spiders. Sometimes they're so close that they can't use spiders, right? Mm-hmm. But for the most part, they are, you know, full on macro, just right up in there. And I feel like you have to ask yourself, and this is sort of a broader question about watching a movie like this in general. We learned in 1981, oh, this is how you do this. Get really fucking close to the spider. That's how you do this scene. Why wasn't every subsequent version of this exact scene that happens in so many horror movies as good or better? It's like,
I have no idea.
People just forgot the lessons of the Beyond, forgot the lesson. And that's what amazed me last time we saw Fulci. And every time I see Fulci, is he seems to know these things. And it's just like a lost tome of knowledge where he does it. It's pretty much perfection for its time and place and context. And then we just can't do it that well again.
Right.
When those spiders are just tearing at the flesh, I mean, everything, it feels like a masterclass, but it also feels like, oh, it's pretty obvious how you do this. You know, you couldn't really do a full breakdown and go, let me give you the minutia of what's making this scene work. It's like, no, you get really fucking close to those things. You don't want to be there. And then they're doing stuff to your face that doesn't even make sense and you don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like rarely, if ever, especially with this scene, have I seen something as good.
Sure. Agree. I mean, well, and I think that is sort of, for me, that has always been my takeaway with The Beyond is almost like in one film and, you know, sort of like you said, almost by accident, it's a greatest hits of gore shots, just this movie.
Greatest hits. There you go.
You know,
that's exactly the phrase I wanted.
And I feel like, the one thing that suffers, and I don't care, is the story. Who cares, right? She's got white eyes and there's a gate of hell under the hotel. That's all I needed.
Funniest things about this story. So again, to compare it to other Fulci things and really other stuff in the genre, I think one of the things that stands out about this is this movie supposed to be in America?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't feel that at all. Like, not for a second do I fucking feel that. Wait, it's supposed to be Louisiana, right?
Yeah, it's the South.
Oh, yeah. So this is basically, it feels like Hatchet. It's just like Hatchet.
Mm-hmm.
Totally feels exact. Like, nothing about this feels fucking American to me. But, you know, it's a more straight zombie movie. So we also have to remember that these types of things weren't in as great a number as we have them today. I mean, as soon as we talk Zombie 2, and we're talking about like the origins of zombies. So we're not far after that. Doing a movie like this, I think that would be a really easy thing just to gloss over is everything that go back and listen to those shows, you know, all of the original zombie stuff we talked about and Romero and all of that. I just want to check a box to say, give some credit to The Beyond for some of that as well. But there is like a weird, I think this is of all the Fulci things I see that like poke a fork too close to the eye.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the one story-wise, or you're right, man. I can't even say story, but you know,
sure.
Theme-wise, I guess. With these fixations on the eyes, there's something thematically in here about the kind of, I mean, it's the white eyes. It's the things you can and can't see, right?
Yeah.
We're kind of going to this other dimension, this other layer of hell, this beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And we're dealing with a lot of the, it's almost like a third eye kind of thing. The idea that you might be on top of a gateway to hell is something that got played with so much, even in some of the Carpenter movies we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
As we went on in the 90s, or I've seen a couple movies from the last decade or two. That fucking Johnny Depp book movie springs to mind. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just think about a lot of these movies that are sort of like we're sitting upon the very gate to hell.
Sure.
And so there's something about The Beyond having this weird kind of like always making the jokes about Fulci poking eyes out and doing weird gory things with eyeballs, that this is also a movie that's kind of about that occult sight or that ability to transcend through the eye. It feels so quintessentially Fulci in that way.
Yeah, and it also, I think, falls in the Fulci canon sort of in that, in a spot where like he's beyond experimenting with his voice and is now experimenting with his films. You know what I mean? He, I think, comes to the table with enough knowledge of what he's going to do to be able to pack all of this stuff in a way. So one of the things that I will say about the story, and this is probably a thing definitely worth earmarking on Double Feature, The Land of the Killapalooza, is that while this film is, as we already said, sort of a greatest hits of gore shots, and that in and of itself requires sort of just a checklist of people dying one at a time, it never feels like a slasher movie or just like a, you know what I mean? Like it somehow sidesteps one person dies at a time, another one bites the dust as like sort of the overarching vibe of the movie. I think, you know, you mentioned Hatchet. I think Hatchet's a perfect example of, you know, what a slasher movie is, which is you have eight people. You will not be injected more people into this story. There are eight. They're in a remote enough place where more people will not add up. And you can essentially watch them die like flies, Agatha Christie style, 10 little Indians.
Sure, sure.
But this movie, you get all these people and when they die, it doesn't feel like it just, it doesn't feel like one more down. It just seems like, and that person also met an untimely demise, but that's, it never feels like the story is moving toward that solitary survivor. You know what I mean?
Well, it's because we don't have a single, I mean, I think you go to slashers because it's like, here's our one guy mm-hmm. who's taking on all of these victims where, you know, if we look at the John Carpenter canon, we can take a movie like Halloween that is very clearly about being picked off one by one by this force, by the shape, mm-hmm. by Michael Myers. And then look at something like The Fog, where it's just kind of like,
sure,
something in that fog. You don't want to be around that fog.
But even so, like from a Killapalooza standpoint, like Halloween is probably, you know, that's an easy benchmark for slashers in year one, but we also did Final Destination. And this could feel like Final Destination, you know what I mean?
Sure.
But it doesn't.
Right. So, yeah, because you have no central figure.
Yeah.
Well, you know, a thing that I think separates it from looking at the Herschel Gordon movies, which are also kind of, you know, there's a mysterious killer. It's a little bit more,
sure.
You know, I think when you brought up Herschel Gordon Lewis, it feels a little closer to Giallo for me.
Yep.
Yeah, because it has that same kind of detective-y what's going on here. You know, we got to track down this killer before it's too late kind of thing. But the thing that really separates it from even Herschel stuff and makes it so, you know, so distinctly Fulci. Okay, so think about Blood Feast and how that feels very distinct in compared mm-hmm. to Herschel's other movies. And you go, oh yeah, but this one's got all the Egyptian stuff. Whereas this could just as much be the Fulci movie that's in Louisiana, but it doesn't feel like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in taking that comparison against another kind of, I don't know, auteur gore, early days of gore, pioneer, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things that I see about Fulci is just that the atmosphere is so fucking distinctly his that he can't really shed a movie from being a Fulci movie.
Right.
Even when you move the entire thing to another country, you try to, you know, everybody's speaking English. It doesn't stop that the atmosphere permeates more than who's doing the killing. That the reason it can probably do set pieces in this way is because you don't have a distinct killer. I think it gets a little bit harder to have a killer that is, you know, an icon, because an icon kind of means a pattern, means, you know, they use this weapon or the deaths happen. Even Final Destination is kind of like the deaths happen in this way.
Mm-hmm.
This is a movie that can go all these different ways and have all these different set pieces because you're just unleashing this mass of horrors. It doesn't come from one distinct direction.
Sure.
So, you know, you do the spider scene, you do the dog is the killer at some point, you know, which is also another fucking like getting Dickie is the hero of this story. Getting mauled by the dog. I think if you were going to look at any of the gore from this movie, that's one of the scenes that really seems so different than the way we're used to seeing blood in an Argento film or really, really anything else we're used to seeing on this show, where it's like, yeah, the skin's tearing away and there's a ton of blood, but just the way it moves, that's the stuff that makes it feel a little more like Herschel Gordon, because it's so unnatural. It doesn't, it's not like it shoots out, right?
Right.
Like when we see stuff that's a little more in the Savini, Romero, kind of, this is a fucking name check episode if we've ever done one. We are all over the map here. But when you see something like that, you know, a limb comes off and it sprays blood everywhere. This is like the skin comes off and there's so much blood under there. And it's not like in a huge hurry to exit the body or anything. It's just like sitting in these slow moving. It's so unsettling, just the flow of it. It's another one of the things that is so distinctly just this movie and this movie alone, or this director alone, this style alone. It makes it so unlike those other things. I think that's part of what probably gives it, you know, a little bit of that atmosphere. That or the foggy sort of...
Sure.
I think about the end of The Beyond. The end is like, if you ever want to talk about sticking a landing... You know, it might be the most unforgettable thing from the movie. And if you can choose where in the movie to put your most unforgettable thing, I think the end is the spot to put it. Talked about that, or at least I felt that a little bit in the last Fulci movie we did. But going to this other place that is unlike anything we've seen and is just a total sort of other world, it sticks out a lot. It's incredibly memorable. And again, I think it speaks to word of the day, which is atmosphere. That's a lot of Fulci.
A lot of Fulci.
And a lot of, sorry, is this on me to transition over to?
No, I can
Michael,
do it.
Speaking of atmosphere, something about painting with colors. Wow, these transitions are really hard. I don't know why I give you crap for
Russian
these.
Are, it.
You know who loves atmosphere is
Kieslowski.
Let's stick on a Kieslowski thing for a second. And we'll open here and you tell me where you want to go. But
okay.
The reason that I really wanted to do Three Colors on the show is that, you know, let's go back to Decalogue. You remember doing one of the Decalogue movies on additional content?
Yeah. Yeah, we did. I think we did the first one. Yeah.
I believe it was the first one. Yeah. So Krzysztof Kieslowski, Polish director. We spoke a little about his background last time we did one of these episodes. This guy did 10-hour-long films, thematic films. Maybe even less convoluted than the weird thematic, you know, three colors, French flag, white stands for the French ideal of revenge or whatever the fuck. equality. Equality. I feel uncomfortable taking jabs at the French being in such close proximity, like maybe they can hear me or something.
Well, and especially when they're that vengeful. Yeah.
Right. But just imagine, all right, so he chooses to make these 10-hour-long movies. What commercial purpose does that serve? It's an extremely uncommercial thing to do. It fits no mold. What are you supposed to do with an hour-long movie? You can't do anything with that. You show it around. You play it at some festivals. You know, you put it in the box set, I guess. It is so art for art's sake.
But...
You know what I mean?
I do, except had he done that in 2019 and it was on HBO, it would be the literal benchmark for how... how visual art is even being consumed right now.
Okay, yeah, maybe. Or maybe you make, you know, six of the best one-hour movies of the year, but people just call it Chernobyl and it's only one movie.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You right. know, like, the, no matter what the series... Or stop writing your fucking tweets where you're like, it was in a deal with the Polish Film Administration to put it on TV. The point is, you're doing 10 hours of film work instead of an hour and a half of it.
Right.
And the truth is, like, they're great. This is great. All of this stuff is great. And no one talks about him in the sense that we would anybody who I feel like is his
sure.
contemporary.
Sure.
You know, when you look at other people that are kind of
in the peer group, yeah.
Yeah, right. Whether this is exactly your sort of tempo for a movie or the things you like, I know that these are wildly different than Fulci movies. Mm-hmm. But just look at what this guy's doing and then come up in your mind with some people that you think might be doing similar things. He probably has done more of them than those people.
Mm-hmm.
And he's never talked about in the same breath. And I just think it's one of the truly kind of, not completely unsung, but a double feature listener had pointed this guy out to us. And I couldn't believe that all this stuff was just sitting out there and nobody ever talked about it.
Yeah, I agree.
So that gets us to Three Colors White. I still describe Three Colors Blue as, you know, hey, here's this theme this guy set up for himself and look at his weird approach to it. I still think that's the funniest thing about it. What do you think about, so having seen that, and I know you hadn't seen White yet, and I hadn't seen White yet. So when we arrive here, is it as crazy the way that he, when you say blue is about liberation and then you watch that movie, you're like, wow, that's a fucking take. Do you feel the same way about White, or are we a little bit more in the
No, I absolutely. Here? I think what I love about it is actually that I feel like the way that these themes are tackled are like if somebody asked you and I, like especially way back when we were both living in Chicago, like, hey, make a movie about equality. And then we would immediately be like, okay, so what are they expecting? Let's not do that. You know, and immediately be like, okay, so what is this about? It's about a guy who gets divorced and humiliated and loses everything and then goes through hell, has to fake murder somebody. And then at the end, big twist, ruins his wife's life. Boom, now they're equal. Like everything's fair.
Right.
That'd be like our ABCs of death short for E for equality.
Yeah. Yeah. E for equality would have been an amazing ABCs of death.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of funny to even think about it as equality because yeah, it's more of flipping the tables.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing is I think it things don't necessarily, it's not, yeah, you're right. It's not, the film is not about equalizing the playing field. Mm-hmm. The film is about everybody gets the same shit handed to them at some point. It's more karmic than actual equality.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something in this. I guess I feel like the whole tone of this movie is different than what we were doing last time. And I think after having watched Decalogue for additional content and then watching Blue, I had kind of a vibe for the heavy, sad, you know, French or Polish, take your pick, but kind of this, the sad French cinema vibe. And I was also really surprised to see how funny the movie was. Like the movie's weird sense of humor.
Yeah.
That scene where he's sitting in the metro playing some somber instrument. And when the camera finally lands on him, it's a fucking comb.
Yeah. It's just...
And it's so sad. He's sitting there. He's playing his comb. He's out on his luck. You know, everything is the floor is coming apart underneath him. And the guy walks up and just goes, hey, your fly's open. It's just such a, it's a movie that could just as easily have played out. Like, I kind of wonder what separates this movie from something like The Trial, you know,
mm-hmm.
where it's just with seemingly no... no, to him anyways, logic or reason. His whole life is just going to fall apart.
Sure.
You know, he's got just a couple dollars left and then the machine eats them just inexplicably, no fucking reason. You know, this guy comes up and he's got a job for him, but he's got to murder somebody. And everything just, he even forges a plan to get back to Poland mm-hmm. through a suitcase and then gets like mugged. Somehow still winds up in Poland, which is also like him falling down the ditch. They beat the fuck out of him. He lands in the ditch. He stands up. He shouts, "Home at last." It's just like, it's not even that I'd say it's black comedy. It's, I just don't even understand the film's sense of humor.
Right.
It's really funny to me, and I just can't exactly, it almost plays out like a, like, you know, LA Story mm-hmm. or one of the movies from that era.
Yeah. I mean, it to me, it feels almost like a Todd Solondz movie.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
With less cum, but like it's.
I was going for Steve Martin, you go for Todd Solondz, we're just in different places right now.
I think watching it, it's funny because I like that it starts in the same. I like that the movie is actually like tangentially connected to Blue. I like that it's the same court scene from Blue.
Oh, yeah.
I think that that's fun for the universe.
Yeah. Right.
But I also just think like, Blue was sort of this like deeply tragic, melancholic, like spiral of a movie.
Yeah.
And White feels so much more like, I think I maybe it's the knowledge of the sort of cyclical nature of equality being at the heart of the movie. That the movie essentially goes, I know, he's like getting his balls kicked, but you know, it's like about equality. So like, we know it won't stay that way.
Sure.
You know, it's almost like for you and I, like watching, you know, sort of your quintessential rom-com being like, well, they're broken up, but we know how this ends. And Kieslowski's like off like 10 levels above us being like, well, it's about equality. So we know how this ends.
Well, I think it's strange that this seems like a less personal movie than Blue does. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been talking about, oh, it's this guy's plight. He's divorced from his wife in an intensely embarrassing court scene, you know, or for a really embarrassing reason. And then just everything falls out underneath him. And that seems like it would be a really, really personal story. But I think maybe what makes it less tragic is that in comparison to Blue anyways, it's still all happening to this one man, and it's still about what this one man's going through. But you see so much of sort of the world around him and how it's changing, or this idea between France and Poland. You know, it's in the court scene where he stands up and kind of protests and says something to the effect of, you know, like, I feel that, he says something like, just because I can't speak French, it shouldn't be held against me. Mm-hmm. Or it's even, I think it's worded a little more accusatory. You know, it's like, oh, just because I can't speak French, do I not get a fair shake in this whole thing? And there are all of these weird, weird pieces of changing Europe that I have to plead ignorance to, where, you know, when they talk about like the neon sign, he goes back to Poland, they're talking about, oh, you got a neon sign now.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Or there's that line that sticks out to me of when they're, I think they're in the car, but they're talking about the dead body. And there's that little fucking remark, which you just know when you hear it means something, where they're just like, oh, you can buy anything now. Mm-hmm. I don't think they go as far as to say, oh, you can buy anything in Poland now, but it feels like they do, whether they do or not.
Right.
And so there's kind of this changing idea of Europe and what's happening and how a person feels as the world around them is shifting, that I don't think is, it doesn't feel like it goes so far or so direct. Again, look, maybe I'm pleading my ignorance here, but it doesn't feel so direct as to go, this is what I don't like about Poland today. Mm-hmm. Or this is how I feel about France. Or this is how I feel about what's going on in Europe. But it does sort of speak to, I used to have this relationship and it was a certain way. You know, I had this plan for how things were going to be. And then Europe changed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the signs aren't like they used to be anymore. And they're, even Dominique, like a part of the whole, part of her whole setting the place on fire is like, I will never go to fucking Poland. As if there's some, I don't know, I feel like there's some bad blood here that I don't totally understand. But I guess my bigger point was just that this is a movie that feels a little less personal to me and maybe can afford to be a little funnier than, say, the tragedy of Blue.
Right.
Because Blue is, it's very much about loss, personal loss, this person. Imagine you are this person. Imagine what they're going through. And I think White spends a lot more time kind of looking at the world around him and sort of remarking on it, almost in a what are you going to do kind of way. You know, things aren't like they used to be. Look at this crazy world we live in now. What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Gonna end the show. This. That's what you're gonna do.
My take on whites are: look at this crazy world. What are you gonna do, USA?
This would have been. I guess it's always a perfect show. You know, that's the crazy thing is it's sort of like, oh, this would have been really good for us a couple of years ago. But when do you not feel like that? I think to some extent, everybody always.
Well, it films based in sanity,
right?
Seem like films. Better suited a few years back.
Fact. All right, let's get the fuck out of here. What do we do at the end of the show?
At the end of the show, we have a website. That's doublefeature.fm. You can get on the Twitter. You can talk to us. You're at, I think you're still Eric X. I don't know. You got to tell me again.
E-R-I-C underscore. Nope, don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. It's okay. Just do a search for what's that movie, Blue Something, that you're all like fucking on Twitter fire about right now?
Blue Something that you are on Twitter fire. I don't know what you are talking about, but I will say that a big thanks goes to, look, it's loaded. I was worried with the with my European calling card minutes rapidly ticking down, I wouldn't be able to fumble through this list. But I'll give it a shot. It's Abbot of Unreason, Ben Ecker, Brett Hayton, Charles Crawford, John, still loading, Tom Leonard, and Walt Duncan.
It's a short list.
Hey guys, thanks for supporting the show. It does seem about one short, doesn't it? Seem about one short. Patreon.com/doublefeature. Thanks for putting up with the show today. And it'll probably be like this, I don't know, maybe a couple more times. Doing what I can to make it back. Oh, I've almost gotten through the whole show without saying Across the Pond. Just, I don't have to. I don't have to.
Next time on Double Feature.
Across the Pond.
We're going to do sort of a modern take on loss, a modern take on the strains of loving somebody. We're going to do that with the film The Big Sick, which if you haven't seen, you absolutely need to see. Just a fabulous fucking movie. Really funny. You're going to love it. And then we're going to pair that with Peter Jackson's The Lovely Bones, which if you haven't seen it, you absolutely need to see it. Fabulous movie. Very funny. You're going to love it.
Yeah, man, don't be such a downer. These are going to be two splendid movies that will tickle your funny bone. And I will probably snicker into this landline regardless. So I'm sure it'll be an easy ride.
Get your giggles in. Watch more fucking film.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.